This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Welcome back to TSN 1050. This is Overdrive. I'm Matthew Cause. That's Derek Taylor in all week for Brian Hayes, Jeff O'Neill, and Jamie McLennan. How are you doing there, Derek? How was the first hour for you?
Well, you just did one of my great broadcaster peeves.
What's that?
Of all time. You said welcome back to people who did not go anywhere.
Oh, you're right.
You and I went away.
Yes.
We went away.
Yes.
I went to get a water.
To the listener, yeah.
I went to get a water and got robbed out of $2 by the machine.
What happened?
I put a toonie in the machine, and it did not register that my money had gone in.
Really?
And there no water came out. So, and it's, you're like, oh, I can't just shake this machine because, one, it might fall on me. Two, probably a bad look.
Yeah.
And, yeah, three.
Did you put your hand into it and then, like, then say that your hand is trapped and that they're going to have to chop your arm off and it's just because you're not letting go?
One of the great 30 Rock scenes of all time.
And Simpsons. No, that was Simpsons with Homer.
No, I'm thinking the one where Pete gets his arm caught in.
Yes, yeah.
So he just, and if you haven't seen this, I'll just briefly give it to you. He's able to see a phone, and he says, I just need any four numbers. Any four numbers at all. Takes off his shoe, takes a quarter, throws it, gets a number. Takes off his ring, throws it, gets a number. Takes off something else, throws it, gets a number. Takes off, gets a number. Yes, I've done it! And it's his own line. Hi, this is Pete Hornberger.
That was good.
No! One of the great 30 Rock gags of all time. One of the funniest shows ever.
Yes.
Easy.
I always called that show, and there's a bunch of them like it, like Arrested Development. I called it Comedy Cheesecake, because in every couple sentences, there would be several jokes. It was thick. It was thick with humor throughout.
Yep.
Jack Armstrong's going to join us in a couple minutes. And
speaking of thick with humor, Jack Armstrong.
And, you know, we'll talk a little bit. To me, I'm not as interested in Damari Carroll's failures. More about where this team is now, what's the best case scenario for CJ Miles, and just if he was the coach, if he's Dwayne Casey, what are the biggest challenges going forward?
Yeah.
And so Jack will join us in a couple minutes.
Plus, we got to talk about Canada's under-19 basketball team.
That's right.
Jack, I mean, I know Jack's from the other side. He's from Lewiston, but
oh yeah,
he was there, and I'm sure Jack is very familiar with Rowan Barrett, played at St. John's, and we're all going to be very familiar with Rowan's son RJ, who is the star of Canadian Stars right now.
Yeah, and Canada, for people who don't know, Canada in the gold medal game, they won at the FIBA Under 19 Basketball World Cup, and it proved two things. One, it proved that Canada, we are certainly progressing at the grassroots level. Every year, there's more Canadians playing in college, getting drafted high. And the second thing is that unless you win, we don't give a bleep. Andre DeGrasse might join us later in the show today. There was an Andre DeGrasse article this weekend in the Toronto Star. I made sure to read it. In fact, that's the first thing I read because of his success at the Olympics. Same thing with Penny Oleksiak. You know, if you win, we will pay attention. If Canada had came in fourth at the FIBA Under 19, it would get no attention.
No,
it got no attention at all.
If the Americans had brought the 50 players they left at home or the three big kids going into college, then we wouldn't have won and we wouldn't have cared. But now we know.
But good, that's great.
That's fantastic.
Build on the momentum.
Because basketball needs more love.
Yeah.
Basketball is my sport. Basketball is my winter sport. It needs more love.
I was going to say your sport. CFL is your sport. You know, just
basketball is my winter sport.
Okay.
You kind of have to choose basketball or hockey. And I wish there had been minor basketball in my hometown growing up. Instead, there was a hockey rink that kept catching on fire. Well, what can you do?
We'll talk about that in a little bit. I know I want to hear that story. Aaron Judge, and again, Jack's going to join us in a minute or two. Aaron Judge from the Yankees has a chance tonight to at least for, say, a week, become the biggest star in North America, and more specifically in the United States. He's in the home run derby tonight. If he wins it, if he crushes a couple deep, consider young, attractive, Yankee, and one of the top for the MVP right now.
Attractive? That dude's like a 6. Come on.
I'm going to give him a 7.5.
Come on, braces.
What's that?
Braces.
It says to me it's all about self-improvement. I like that in my man. But if he wins it, he'll knock off all the what's going to happen to LeBron James and Dan Gilbert conversation. Aaron Judge will be the number one story, at least south of the border.
Well, he'll be on Kelly and Michael or Regis and Kathy Lee or whatever it's called nowadays. He'll do the tour.
Michael's not on any of them anymore. Strahan's left.
Right, he left for whatever. So
it's Ryan Seacrest. It's Ryan Seacrest and Kelly Ripa.
Regis and Kelly. I don't even.
By the way, Ryan Seacrest, he's America's answer to Jim Taddy.
No, guy.
No, yes, guy. Jim Taddy has got 17 different jobs. And it's like this job opening came up. Strahan left. There's 4,000 broadcasters for that job. And they give it to Ryan Seacrest. Like, he is not busy enough. He's the Jim Taddy.
Well, New Year's Rockin' Eve, right, is only one day with another day for prep, probably, and another day to recover from the hangover. So you got 300. He does that. Man, he does everything. He does take jobs away from people.
Yeah, he does. It's like Betty White. Retire already. Same thing with Seacrest. Not Taddy, though. That man is a national treasure and should work until the day he dies.
Oh, I love Taddy.
Joining us on the line, it is Jack Armstrong. It's been a little while, and Jack Armstrong is joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. That was a really clunky intro because I was searching for my liner, because, of course, Jack is sponsored. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Am I sponsored? I didn't know I was sponsored.
You will be getting a new car. You'll be getting a Toyota Corolla for doing this this one hit.
I think it's actually a maple donut from the Maple Toyota people. I think that's what it is.
Well, it's more than I'm getting right now, so it's pretty good.
Now, to be fair, it's not a full free donut. You have to pay for half of it, but we work out a payment plan. It's like a lease to own with this donut.
You are such nice guys. And I got a kick out of what you're saying about Jim Taddy. I mean, he is a national treasure, and you know, considering he's a real estate baron as well. He's cutting real estate deals left and right. But here's the thing about, you know, you have 17 jobs, they can't fire from all 17. So
that'd be remarkable if you could. They're like, Taddy, you've gotten really bad at your job if suddenly he was unemployed.
You're in the witness protection service. I mean, sooner or later, they can't find you. You're going to make money somewhere, you know?
He's the Henry Hill. He's the Henry Hill of Canadian media.
Henry Hill of independent contractors. Yeah.
I didn't think that's where the interview was going to start. Jack, from a coaching standpoint, how much better can Lowry, and we'll get to C.J. Miles and his addition, and Damari Carroll's gone. We'll get to all that. But I want to start by at least looking ahead a little bit. And you're a former coach. How much better can Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka be now with an entire training camp with the coaching staff, having more time to work these three pieces together on the floor?
Well, I think it's going to help their chemistry, and there's no question. I think the consistency of Ibaka down the stretch of the season, in the regular season, I thought he was pretty solid. He did a good job. And then in the playoffs, it was kind of a little bit hit and miss, but I think that was more a reflection of the roster around him. I mean, I don't think he played well in a few games here and there, particularly on the road. But again, I think when every shot you take, you feel such immense pressure on you because other people aren't delivering anything. I think you press a little bit, and I also think defenses lock in on you, and it becomes more difficult. And I think hence that's why Damari Carroll was moved. That's why Patrick Patterson wasn't re-signed, because those two guys in particular didn't produce, you know, down when they really needed them to be good secondary pieces. They were nowhere to be found. So I think when you have these three guys and they have an opportunity to really play together, and they haven't played together all that much, I think it'll help those three develop a chemistry. But, you know, you guys know this. It all comes down to the building around the edges, and they're going to have to do a great job doing that. And the coaching's got to be outstanding.
Jack, I feel like I'm around a lot of people who are pretending to know what C.J. Miles is as a player, because if I sat on C.J. Miles' lap, it'd be uncomfortable and I wouldn't know who he was. Can you give us something about C.J. Miles and what he will bring to the Raptors?
Well, he's left-handed. He is, but he can shoot it. You know, the thing that I like about him, he's a guy in today's NBA that shoots with great accuracy. And I think based upon where the Raptors are at right now, they desperately need that. So I think if you're just straight out comparing him to Damari Carroll, and you ask me which guy would I rather have, I'd rather have Miles. I mean, just Carroll, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. And, you know, they had to, you know, kind of just say, hey, man, this is not working out, and cut their losses. And they did that. And I think, you know, there's been a little criticism about the fact that, you know, they gave up a number one pick to do it. But I think the bigger mistake would be holding on to him, because too often people try to double down on mistakes. The coaches feel pressure to play the guy, and the coach ends up getting fired because he's playing a guy who can't play instead of trying to play with guys that can play. And I think it hurts the front office, hurts everybody. I think you ultimately got to look in the mirror and say, hey, this didn't work out, whatever reason. None of us are perfect. The Raptors have, what is it, 8 guys right now on controlled contracts. I mean, you don't have any more room for another pick. And if you're good, like you think you're going to be, it's going to be in the 20s somewhere. So if that's going to get a burden off your shoulders, then in my opinion, you do that. And the second round pick wasn't even yours. That was Orlando's. You got that as compensation for Jeff Weltman. So I think you do it. And I think the Corey Joseph dynamic in play is more so trying to free up an opportunity for DeLon Wright, because you believe he's ready to take another step, and you're trying to kind of improve your cap situation in terms of staring at the luxury tax, and also in terms of how you go about team building with your mid-level exception.
Yeah, I mean, what Masai Ujiri has done is just created the flexibility. They can now bring in someone else. Masai Ujiri certainly doing a good job. Jack, here's my thought on Damari Carroll. And this is not me playing Captain Hindsight, because I said this at the time. Damari Carroll, you know, and a lot of it was injuries. Just as simple as that, injuries and bad luck. But when I look at Damari Carroll, maybe that 1 year with Atlanta was a blip when he hit career highs, because he was on a 60-win team. He was surrounded by 4 other All-Stars and a great coaching staff. To expect him to go to Toronto and replicate that, when earlier in his career he bounced around 4 teams in 5 years. You know, I get why they went after a guy like Damari Carroll, but I just don't think Damari Carroll was ever going to be the player he was in that one great year with the Hawks.
You know, but he had good players around him in Toronto too, and he had wide open shots. And if you're a professional athlete getting paid $60 million over the life of 4 years...
And he didn't hit him.
And he didn't hit him.
And
so
that goes to my point. I think that one year he had with Atlanta was a bit of an aberration about who he was. Like, that was the Raptors, and let's get to the little Jim Taddy analogy here. Jim Taddy will never tell you to buy a home when it's at its highest level. Wait to see if it can come down in cost. That was sort of Damari Carroll.
That's the case, but I'll go the other way on a second. I mean, I just personally think that if you're paid a lot of money to do one thing, when he was paid a lot of money to do 2 things well, be a lockdown defender and to make shots, and he didn't do either one. And to me, you know, I mean, injuries probably played a big part in it, but for whatever reason, sometimes when guys get the big money, sometimes they don't work as hard. Other guys feel such pressure that it's paralysis by analysis. Whatever it was, I mean, he's a good guy. I like his makeup. I thought he was a guy that throughout his career, I was always a fan of him. And I thought when they got him, they paid a little over market price for him. It was kind of a need at that point, and I didn't mind the signing one bit. I just was concerned with the money a little bit, but he didn't even come close. I mean, if you looked out there on the floor sometimes, you know, you would, and you know, I'm not going to, I think I was pretty straight up about what I felt about him and what I felt about Patrick Patterson. I know the analytics people love Patterson, and Pat, you know, again, did a real good job here and was a winning type player. But when the chips were down, and I don't think he was comfortable being big in the spotlight. And I hope that this time around in Oklahoma City, he won't shy away from it. He'll embrace it. And again, when you're in this league right now and people are paying you huge dollars to be a specialist in a certain area, what's Patterson? Patterson's adorable, flexible, can guard a few positions defender, and he's got to make open shots. And if you look at what he's being paid by Oklahoma City right now, it's well below where I think he or his agent or anyone else thought he'd be getting paid this offseason. He hurt himself. And in my opinion, that hurt the Raptors. And again, when you look at a roster with Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka, you need other people to take something off the pressure. And as great as LeBron is, he needs a Kyle Korver and a J.R. Smith and a Channing Frye and guys like that to make open shots. And they do.
Jack, I want to make you the GM of the Atlanta Hawks for just a second. New York offers your Tim Hardaway Jr. 4 years and $71 million. You have the right to match. Will you exercise that right to match?
No way.
Oh my God.
Absolutely not.
Can you believe that? In like last year, sure, the salary cap went bonkers. Can you believe that contract offer this year?
So, DT, I agree with you. I was shocked by that offer. And to me, I think it was... again, you know, way over market price. Now, I think Tim Hardaway has gotten better, and I think he's trending in a positive direction. But, man, that's a lot of money. And if you're Atlanta, and obviously you've made a decision to let Paul Millsap walk, you know, Jeff Teague last year, and obviously Dwight Howard, you pull off a trade for him and move him out. It's clear that they're going in another direction. It's clear that... philosophically, with their ownership group now, that Coach Budenholzer isn't even as big a part of what's going on there as he maybe was, and they're hitting the reboot button. And so I think they did the right thing by denying getting involved with that. And on the other hand, I think if you're Knicks, I don't know who made that call there, but
Phil Jackson. He's not on the team anymore. He made that deal.
No, it's Steve Mills. And by the way, you know, it's interesting. I think it's a joke as well. You know, you talk about Isaiah Thomas having had a few lives with MSG. Steve Mills, prior to this, was the president of the Knicks, and then he got sent out the door. Now he kind of comes back because he's tight with Jim Dolan, and now he's being discussed again as president. I mean, he's part of the problem. Yeah, I understand that Dolan's a big part of the problem, but I think Steve Mills is too, and this is a clear example of it with a move like this.
I just think that maybe... Have you ever seen the movie The Shining, Jack?
Yes.
I think Madison Square Gardens is the Overlook Hotel. And whoever comes and is the boss eventually goes insane and makes horrible decisions. I mean, Isaiah Thomas was so respected as a player, failed miserably. Phil Jackson, maybe the greatest basketball mind of our generation, and he's been run out of town. And, you know, James Dolan, I mean, the Rangers, they're not bad, but with the Knicks, horrible. I just think there's something with MSG.
Well, I think it's something. I think, you know, it's interesting. I think we saw it with the Leafs years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there's much better management there now. And here's the problem with the Knicks. They're responsive to the back page of the paper. It's an organization that's thin-skinned, and they allow the media, they allow the fans, they allow the pressure. Even though they're selling out every game, and instead of just saying, hey, we're going to do it the right way, we don't care what you think, you know, we know you're still going to buy our tickets, and it doesn't matter. But we're going to do it right. I think Jim Dolan's an impulsive guy and starts throwing fits when the media criticism gets there, and your president, your GM, your coach feels a lot of pressure, and they overreact. A friend of mine, Scott Layden, who, by the way, did a very, very good job when he was in Utah with the Jazz. They went to two NBA finals. He gets the Knick job, and he's a dope, you know, and then he goes to San Antonio, works with Greg Popovich. Now he's smart again. Now he's the GM of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Oh, by the way, they had a pretty good offseason.
Yeah.
You know, so my point is, I think, you know, knowing firsthand a lot of the ins and outs of that organization, I just think it's just, you know, what the great Marv Levy say, if you worry too much about what the fans and the media think, you're going to end up sitting with them. And that's exactly what happens there. And on the other hand, too, I think if you're Phil Jackson, you're making so much money, what's to lose? And so you just, and even he, I think, pushed the panic button. Joakim Noah was a big overpay. And
Derrick Rose.
Yeah, it just happens a lot. And I think that's why I said if when Masai Ujiri's name came up, I thought he'd be an ideal fit for them because he's a truly patient guy and he doesn't listen to the chatter.
Don't say that. Stop it. Stop it, Jack. Don't give them any ideas.
To the noise.
Yeah. Jack, Canada wins gold at the men's under 19 basketball championship. To me, and you would have better perspective on this, to me, this seems like the two decades later ripple effect of Vince Carter and Vince Sanity. In Toronto. Am I off base? Am I on the mark? Where am I with that?
No question. I think it's not only Vince Carter, but I think it's just in general the presence of the NBA, DT, the presence of college basketball. You know, you and I worked the NCAA tournament together, and it just overall, the world's a smaller place. If you look at the fastest two growth sports in Canada right now, it's basketball and soccer, and I think it's an affordable game to play, and a lot of the new immigrants that come in come from countries where basketball and soccer are a big deal, and to me, I just think it's a reflection of the changing society, and it's a reflection of the fact that the sport is getting exposure more than ever before, and kids are playing it, and coaches are coaching it better, and school districts are more supportive of it. I think the NBA and Canada basketball in general have just done a better job with it. It's not just boys as well, it's girls. And it's growing on every level, and the opportunities for kids collegiately and professionally are just booming, and I think it's wonderful.
So would you sooner give $471 million to RJ Barrett versus Tim Hardaway? Can I put you down for that?
Well, you know what?
17-year-old?
I would.
Based upon what we've seen so far from Hardaway, I think it might be a safer bet on Mr. Barrett. I know one thing, he'll probably be a better player than his dad. And Rowan was a terrific player, yes. And I coached against him when he played at St. John's and tried to recruit him. But I think Rowan would even agree that his son has a chance to be really good.
It's a simple math. If the Knicks are doing it, it's bad. Doesn't matter what it is.
It's binary, exactly.
Yes. Jack, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys, my pleasure. Have a great night, and behave yourselves. And I'm going to go do a 19th gig in honor of Jim Taddy.
There you go. Thanks so much. Jack Armstrong, of course, joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit MapleToyota.ca. The Knicks are just such an embarrassment. I mean, just such an embarrassment.
What's worse, matching 4 and 71 for Tim Hardaway or giving the money to Joakim Noah last year? Because both,
I think Noah, because at least
he was broken.
Yeah, he was
always broken.
Yeah, and at least Hardaway is a guy who's trending up and is a young player.
And Jack talked about, hey, the back page is a lot of pressure. Yeah. If that pressure kept them from letting Phil Jackson trade Kristaps Porzingis, mm-hmm. then it's at least done something for the Knicks franchise.
Yeah.
Because that was, of all the things that have happened in the NBA offseason, that is by far the craziest that Phil wanted to trade Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah.
Because there is not another player like him.
Mm-hmm. Now, unless you're trading for Kevin Durant, then knock yourself out. But there's about five players out there.
Would you trade him for Kevin Durant? Because
yes.
Kristaps is still super cheap.
I understand.
Salary becomes a real thing.
Yeah, there. I know, but you one's won an MVP, one we still
Durant,
have to
I would, okay.
Yeah, thank you.
There's maybe five guys
five
I would trade Porzingis for.
There's one
player. Damari Carroll, straight up.
Straight up, done. Great job, Masai Ujiri. Jack brought up one point.
Okay.
And talking about how, you know, the Leafs for so long had dysfunction and, you know, maybe they were too sensitive to what's going on in the media and they wanted, you know, they wanted to try, much like with the Knicks. They would read too much into it and they would react to it. And I think this goes to the NHL in Canada because no Canadian team has won since 1993. And there's 100 factors for it. And some teams, you know, Edmonton, Calgary have gotten close. And, you know, but I think a lot of it's just the one common denominator is the Canadian owners, so many of them, get seduced by the idea of winning a cup in Canada. That they take shortcuts, that they're maybe not always as patient as they want to be, that maybe they fear the proper and smart rebuild. And I'm not saying that's the only reason, but the one common denominator in no Canadian team winning since 1993 is, well, there's a group of Canadian owners. What are they doing wrong?
Well, give me an example of a team that tried to go at it the wrong way. Vancouver seemed to go at it the right way. They made the deal. I mean, they made that deal for the Sundins in what, the 99 draft. Mm-hmm.
But then look at what Vancouver's done recently, where they weren't sure: are we rebuilding? Are we blowing it up?
Yeah.
Ownership didn't want to do it.
Right, but when they were built, like when you know Luongo's in goal and everything is going great guns, and they're in the Stanley Cup final, like,
got to a game seven, could have won it.
It seemed like that was the right way.
So then let me throw this out to you.
But the Canadian teams just don't have a ton of the same options that. Well, poor teams don't have the same options that richer teams have. Mm-hmm. The Oilers, you know, no one, the Jets now, no one's going there. No big free agents going there. So if you don't draft Connor McDavid, Connor McDavid's not coming to your team.
That's part of it. That's absolutely part of it. And you know what? Maybe this is not the day for the debate because there's actually a lot of real sports. But I do believe one of the things is just a lot of dumb owners get seduced being here in Canada.
I'm willing to consider your hypothesis.
I'm not saying you have to buy it. Or you can just think it's a statistical aberration that since 93 it's just never happened.
If you would
say it is, but I think it goes deeper than that.
Montreal getting rid of PK Subban, this owner's not knowing what they're doing. Anyway.
God, I'm going to bring that one up again. God, I got so sick of that. You know what? Montreal did the right thing. I'm so tired of Subban. Shea Weber, much better player.
You just were begging for personality an hour ago. Subban is personality.
I know.
Ugh.
That's Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Cause.
Flip-flop Cause.
That's right. You know, it's a different hour. It's a different me. This is Overdrive. You're listening on TSN 1050. Yeah! Federer versus Milos Raonic.
Another game for Milos.
And by the way, Milos is 2-0 in his last one. It is such cherry pick. It's such cherry picking on my part.
That's what stats are, though. We cherry pick them.
You do that so much. I mean, for the details.
You have to.
But you do it really well. That's Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Cause in for Brian Hayes, who is off this week right here on Overdrive.
So, yeah, 2-0 in his last two versus Roger Federer.
Yeah.
However, 1-9 in the previous 10.
Yes.
Prior to that. So not 3-9 all time, but he's got his number lately.
There it is.
Including
that Wimbledon last year. The thing I would say about Milos Raonic, and this is really unfair, is that rooting for Milos is like rooting for the Raptors. You're going to see lots of wins, but you're never going to see a championship. Joining us now to debunk that, it is Mark Masters, TSN reporter, when he's not down in Etobicoke watching the Leafs practice at the MasterCard Center. He flies all over Europe and never gets to try any of the good cuisine, and electing to have boring sandwiches at hotels. Is that true, Mark Masters?
Yeah, the sandwiches we're not staying at a hotel here, but I am eating pretty much every meal on the site of the Old England Club, and they got some good food there. I'm not gonna lie to you, I like the grub.
Okay,
good sandwiches.
Mark, this is all I've ever wanted from you at Wimbledon. And if you can make this happen, I will be forever grateful. If you remember the episode of Seinfeld where George got caught on camera at the U.S. Open, covered in sundae, if you could replicate that with strawberries and cream, I will, one, reimburse you for the strawberries and cream, and two, I'll just double it. I'll just pay whatever it was times two.
And I'll pay for your dry cleaning. Will you do it?
Well, obviously you haven't watched our coverage because back in 2014, our first Wimbledon that I got sent to, we did do that.
Did you really?
Where we replicated it, and I'm actually here with my cameraman, Peter Bradley, who was there back in 2014. He was on a roof, the broadcast center roof, and what I did is I got a big strawberries and cream, and I sat on a bench beside a court, beside someone who had no idea they're on TV. I put all these napkins stuck into my collars, a collar, and I was eating it in a very unpleasant manner, and actually the wind blew one of the napkins away. I looked up, and then I just kept eating, which was unplanned, but comic. It worked out from a comic perspective, so that was a lot of fun. Yeah, most of the time that we were on the tennis beat that first year, we were just kind of replicating Seinfeld scenes. It was a lot of fun.
If I can
find this on YouTube, Derek.
If I can see this picture or this segment of this photo, I will send you the, what is it, 20 pounds, I'm assuming? I don't know what the price is.
Some quid, whatever it is.
20 quid.
Well, they're Brexit, so they're certainly not Euro. All right, I'll ask Mark Masters a question. You try to find that video of Mark Masters doing this. So it's going to be, I guess the one concern with Milos Raonic, maybe this is me nitpicking, it probably is, just it always seems that matches against guys he should be favored favored. They always seem to go on longer than what they're supposed to. It happened today, but again, Milos Raonic is moving on. When you look at him against Federer, what's going to be the key? Because, as we talked about, he's won his last two matches against Roger.
Yeah, but let's be honest. It wasn't this Roger. I mean, last year, Federer was obviously not as healthy as he is now, not playing with as much confidence as he's playing now, and he still almost beat Raonic last year. Looked like he had him in that fourth set, and then inexplicably he double-faulted a couple times and allowed Raonic to break him in the fourth set last year. So it's going to be a Herculean task. I mean, Federer is the favorite right now, you've got to think, to win this thing. Murray, he's getting through, but his hip doesn't look like it's 100%. Nadal loses today. Djokovic doesn't even play and will have to play tomorrow, and that's a disadvantage for him. Everything seems to be falling for Federer, who's already, you know, a seven-time champion at Wimbledon, has quite the comfort zone. So the question is, finish the statement, Milos Raonic wins if, he serves his brains out, which he's certainly capable of. He's got to be just serving like the best of his abilities and, you know, keeping all the pressure on Federer's serve to keep up with him. And Federer is a little bit off, which he's certainly capable of as well. He hasn't lost a set here. He's due for a bit of a dip in play, you would think. And other than that, you know, Milos Raonic just talked about one of the lessons from last year is making sure he gets that nervous energy out and then channels his energy in a proper way when he gets into those big moments. And we'll see if he can apply kind of the lesson from last year when he lost in the final to Andy Murray and fell behind early and never really got to the top level of his game. You can't have those dips against the top guys, especially when they're playing well. So he's got to be right away locked in, mentally in tune. He's made it clear that on grass, and it is true on grass, that the chances can be few and far between, and he's got to be ready for the one or two chances he's going to get from Federer to cash in. And that's how he wins. The odds are against him for sure, but there's a chance there for sure.
Mark, it's no surprise to you that Matt Cause is the biggest negative Nelly in the building.
So I'm an optimist.
I want to ask
sure.
you. He has to get through Federer in the quarters, potentially Djokovic in the semis, and then maybe Andy Murray in the final. Other than the congenital heart defect that once fell Dredrick Tatum, what's it going to take? Because so close and yet so far, it seems like, from the outside.
Well, I mean, if you're Milos, you just got to take it. It's such a cliche to take it one match at a time, but if he beats Federer on Wednesday, why can't he win the thing? I mean, Federer's the favorite. He beats him. Mind you, it takes a lot out of him, and then you got to play Djokovic, he's never beaten Djokovic, but maybe Djokovic loses. You never know. I mean, Marin Cilic won the 2014 U.S. Open. Everyone, you know, all the big guys kind of fell in the semifinals. It was a Cilic-Nishikori final. You never know. You never know. Someone might lose. Someone might get injured. I mentioned Murray's got the hip injury. Djokovic hasn't been at his top level, although he's starting to show signs of kind of coming on strong. He's not going to be happy having to play Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. He might get tired. You never know. So you beat Federer, you're feeling pretty darn good about yourself, and you're feeling like you can beat anyone. So you focus on Wednesday. And you, if you get through that, you'll worry about Djokovic if he's standing there on Friday.
Yeah, and maybe you get Burdick in the semifinals, and maybe Mueller or it's Cilic in the final. You just hopefully something, because, man, I want him to win so bad.
We all do. Hey, Mark, before we let you go, I'm curious. You know, the news in London over the last year has been pretty dark, pretty grim, a variety of different terrorist attacks. Is security any different this year at Wimbledon versus last year? Do you notice anything, or is it still the same?
It's I haven't noticed much different. It's always been pretty tight. I actually noticed more of a difference in Paris at the French Open. I really felt like they had upped it. Every year it seems like they push us back further and further back. From where they drop us off from the shuttle and the different layers of security. And to be honest, the French, this was a Grand Slam where a fan a couple of years ago ran on the court after Federer's match and tried to get a selfie with Roger. Like, no one seemed to stop him for the longest time. So they probably had the longest to come. But I feel like Wimbledon has always been pretty tight. But, like, you leave a bag in the hallway just to go in and to drop something off with someone, immediately someone's asking you, is that your bag? Like, they're on it. They're on it in a way that maybe in that way, it's a little stiffer, but the checks coming in have always been very similar, but they're just a little more conscientious when you get in there.
Always a pleasure when you join us. By the way, Derek, have you found any video of Mark Masters doing the Costanza?
I think I'm going to have to go into the TSN archives because the interwebs was distinctly unhelpful.
We need to find this video. We need to get it out there for all of Masters Nation. Mark, I'm assuming if I tell you, recommend a place for you to go have a drink, you're going to ignore me and you're not going to go, will you? Right?
Yeah, that's correct. I won't be going to that place. All right. I'm sorry to say.
Get the hell out of here.
Okay. I can do that. See you guys.
Not only a negative Nelly cause, you're super harsh.
All right. People don't know this is an ongoing war I've had with Mark. He gets to, you know, and rightfully so. He's very good at his job. He has earned all of this when he travels to, you know, to France or to England to cover a variety of these, you know, the
major, San Jose.
San Jose, you know, which...
St. Louis.
St. Louis. Beautiful St. Louis, especially the east side.
Butte, Montana. I don't know.
Now you're just making up names. There's no Butte, Montana. And what bothers me is he goes to all these places and he never... tries, I'm not saying go out for 7 hours, you're working, it's a working trip, but you have some free time, and he never goes out and tries any of the local cuisine. And it always bothers me. I'm like, you're there in Paris or in London, there's beautiful restaurants and things to check out, and he's always at Subway. And it's nothing against Subway.
Eat fresh.
Subway has its place in the food ecosystem. I'm not denigrating it. But maybe if you're there, step out a little bit.
Sometimes the days are pretty long.
Right? I get that.
I talked to Tessa Bonham, who covered the World Hockey Championship. She was doing 3 games a day.
Oof.
Like, that's being at the rink for 12 hours? At some point, you just want to shove something in your pie hole and go to sleep because you got to get up and do it again, Bill Murray Groundhog Day style.
Yep.
You're going to step in that same puddle on the way to work. Like, it's just going to be...
I get it. Yeah. I'm not saying go out, travel for 2 hours to find a place, but find a place that's close by that doesn't resemble something you get in Toronto.
I finally got to travel for work to Montreal for a CFL game, and I'm like, well... My wife's like, you got to go see some stuff. I'm like, well, no, I'm super nervous about doing this.
Because it's your first one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My second one, my 10th one, Lord willing, I will enjoy.
You'll be more comfortable. You'll know your way around it a little bit.
That first one, you're focused on don't screw up. Do the work.
And yeah, you were doing the broadcast for a Red Blacks Alouettes preseason game. How nervous were you leading up to that?
Not very. It's just the mechanics are different. Play-by-play, I've done so many times over 9 years. Yeah. The mechanics I was a little concerned about. And then Ottawa, because they were jerks that day.
Yeah.
The game's in Montreal. I did all the research. Trevor Harris this, Greg Ellingson that. Mm-hmm. And then they left everybody at home. So I'm like trying to remember names of guys I'll never hear of again. And I ended up calling Dominique Rhymes Busta Rhymes because that was my mnemonic to remember his name. And then a bunch of guys who, outside of Javier Arenas, you know, that was it. Everybody else was, who are you?
Yeah.
And most of them are not with the team anymore. So that part was frustrating.
I would be a disaster in that category.
Oh, it's so much fun.
It is. It looks fun, but I'd screw up every name. That's Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Cause filling in for Brian Hayes. You are listening to Overdrive right here on TSN 1050. Coming up in about 13 minutes, if you tune in to TSN2, the show will be streamed live.
I'm sorry?
Or just broadcast.
Broadcast. I'm not TV ready, though.
That's where I was going. That's Derek Taylor and Matt Cause. We're in all this week.
Mesh top was a bad call
It
for
really
me.
Was. The black mesh top. You look like the villain from Commando.
Oh, golly. I'm embarrassing my family.
I enjoyed that joke more than I probably should have. Brian Hayes and the boys are off all this week. It's me and Derek Taylor all this week. And yeah, at 6 o'clock, we're going on TSN 2. And it's not like I'm like, you know, really dressed up, but I got a, you know, sort of a button-down pink shirt.
You're one of those pink shirt-wearing guys.
I am. Because, you know, Bart threw that red hat in the wash.
Exactly. Boom.
And you got shorts on. I mean, you know what you look like? At the end of Pulp Fiction, when Samuel Jackson and John Travolta, and one of the people comment, you look like you're going to a volleyball tournament.
Yeah.
So, Derek, that's what you look like.
Keep laughing. They're your clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Santa Cruz banana slugs t-shirt. Yeah.
Good memory.
You know, you made the wrong choice when the boss makes some reference to it. Oh, you couldn't put on pants? I'm like, oh, I blew this one. So my apologies to Jeff and everybody who had to see my legs.
Yeah, you're the dress code. It's a little shady.
Tomorrow I'm coming in a suit because I have to tape something for Sports Internet. Fantasy CFL, I got to tape right after the show with Davis Sanchez. So I will be pimped.
Does that mean, because I've dressed better than you today, does that mean tomorrow I've got to like rent a tux? Because, you know, I got to go one step above.
The degree to which, like, I'm on TV, so I have a closet full of clothes.
Yeah.
I would not have, they're beautiful. And I love the guy who, Lee, our stylist, who helped me pick them out. But I would not, if I could be in sleep shorts and a workout shirt my whole day. Like how I am grinding out numbers until 8 a.m. If I could be dressed like that the whole day.
Yeah.
Oh, greatest job ever.
Before we get back into the poll question, do you know what's one thing I didn't realize? And this is really odd of me. One thing I didn't realize that human beings do. I didn't know that when you came home from work, you got out of your work clothes and put on like sweatpants and a t-shirt. What I'm wearing now, I will wear until the moment I go to bed. And if I was done work at 4 p.m. and if I was wearing this, I would be wearing the. I don't even own sweatpants. I didn't know that people did that sort of thing.
How do you not own sweatpants? You've not. No one's taken you to a Lululemon?
No,
really?
No, I do not own sweatpants.
What if you wore a suit to work?
Would
you wear that till bed?
I would take the jacket off, and maybe if I was wearing a tie, I would take the tie off. But the belt, pants, shirt, sock combo would stay on until it was time for bed.
So if you come home from work and there's housework to be done.
Yeah. Okay, no. If there's housework, then
dogs have to be walked.
Yeah.
It rained outside.
I don't own dogs, but if it's washed, then I'm going to change. Otherwise, I stick with the normal thing.
It rained outside and you wanted to go pick up some takeout.
Wearing the same thing.
Really?
Same thing.
Oh, yeah. No, the second I can. Like, I get home at 2:30 in the morning. I let the dog out. I'm upstairs. Suits off.
Yeah.
You know, tarps off. We're getting down to something comfortable.
Yeah,
because I'm
whole lot of pale coming at you.
Yeah, I sweat profusely, so the quicker I can get a wool suit off, it's just better for everybody.
The poll question, and you can go to my Twitter account at mcause56 to vote. Can you feel sorry for an athlete who makes millions but fails with a team? And almost everyone behind the scenes was like, nope. I don't feel sorry for Damari Carroll, because that's where this question came from. And you and I, we both actually did feel sorry for him. 75% voted no, he's getting millions. I'm not going to get angry at people or aggressively disagree, but you and I were both in the category of yes, it must be embarrassing. Because someone like Damari Carroll, so much of his life has been about being a basketball player. That's so much of his identity. And he finally was given a chance to be a regular, like just not to be a high-end starter with the Raptors and got that big contract. And for a variety of reasons, he was a total abject failure. Part of it's injuries. Part of it is he didn't defend. And he didn't hit his shots. And for him, that's got to be, you know, embarrassing. And it's in front of tons of people. You know, we screw up. You know, actually, it can be embarrassing because there's a lot of people listening. But for a lot of people with your jobs, there's only going to be a couple of people that are going to really know when you're not good at something you thought you were good at.
Yeah.
So I can divorce the money and say, I feel bad for Damari Carroll. He's going to live a great life in terms of financially he's set, but this has to be a blow to him.
I always thought Anna Kournikova was one of the really sad stories in sports because she made money hand over fist.
Mm-hmm.
From being a tennis player and mostly from, you know, off the court because she was super beautiful and they liked advertising with her. But she never won a tournament.
Nope.
And if your whole life never won a WTA tournament, I think she won a challenger level event, never won a tournament. And that's what you worked your whole life to do. Damari Carroll is one of the top 0.01% of basketball players on the planet.
And of course,
it's probably even smaller than that. And for him to go, man, in 2015, Damari going, oh, man, next year I'm taking a jump from this. I'm going to be even better. This team is going to fly. LeBron can eat it because we're going to take him out in the conference final. Fully believing that.
Yeah.
And it just didn't go his way for all these reasons. The man still believes. Guaranteed he still believes in himself.
You have to.
But there's probably with me, there would be a little gnawing in me going, oh, I...
Of course, that the team gave away two draft picks, including a first rounder, because we don't want you around anymore.
So I feel bad for him. He's better at something than I will ever be at anything.
Do not disrespect the details with Derek Taylor. Because your ability to break down these crazy, archaic, and interesting storylines through statistic, you do that better than Damari Carroll did hitting threes for the Raptors last year. At least your video is entertaining. It wasn't entertaining watching Damari Carroll miss wide open shot after wide open shot.
Seeing what he was wearing in the postgame, though, always was entertaining.
And he was a very good guy. You know, I mean, from everything you heard, he was great in the community. So in that sense, he'll be missed. On the basketball court, won't be missed at all.
And like Jack said, as Jack agreed with me, that he was the perfect signing in 2015.
No, he wasn't.
And he said Matt Cause was ridiculous for suggesting differently.
That's him being nice. That is him. That is Jack being nice. Also, you are a bit of
Jack.
That was Jack being nice.
Jack, who set fire to Tim Hardaway Jr., was being nice?
He was being nice.
Come on.
He was being nice.
Jack doesn't necessarily fool around with being nice off the broadcast. So
I just don't understand
how Jack tells the truth.
For someone who just breaks things down analytically and puts emotion to the side, I don't know how you can't at least see where I'm coming from. The idea of a guy who bounces around from team to team to team to team, has one really good year when it's a perfect ideal situation for Damari Carroll, and then, you know, he comes over here and he fails. And, I mean, I don't know why you didn't see that there was a big red flag.
But you're professing to be excited to some degree about C.J. Miles, who's been on three teams and was on three teams in a 4-year span, it just happens to be coming off a career year.
Yep.
In a contract year.
But I'm not overly excited. What I like,
C.J. Miles, woo! He's Damari Carroll 2 years later.
There is no woo here. What there is he fits financially. It's a very good contract. The team's got no outside shooting, so the Raptors needed it. They were desperate for it.
He's a worse player than Damari Carroll was 2 years ago at about half the money. So you're accepting a worse starting product for half the money.
We will fight about that more in a bit. Dirk Hayers is going to join us. He'll tell us what it's like to be in the dugout of a 15-0 loss. This is Overdrive. That's Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Cause. You're listening right here on TSN 1050.